Today, I'm speaking with Noelen Selvanayagam. She's a first-generation Canadian. I'll be speaking with her about debt, about her journey as being a full-time teacher and purchasing properties both locally and also cross-provincially. She's also going to be discussing stabilizing your portfolio, which I think is something that is certainly not talked about enough. So make sure to watch that part as well. Let's get started. Noelen, welcome to the show. So excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Mel. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So tell us a little bit about yourself, about your journey. Take it away.
Yeah, my name is Noelen Selvanayagam. I am a teacher by trade. That's my what I do 9 to 5. And my husband and I started real estate investing just this past, it hasn't even been a year yet. We started off with the Action family near the end of August. And at this time we have 4 properties and 7 doors, both within the Ontario market and the New Brunswick market.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. That's great. Now, did you always have, are these all new properties that you kind of acquired throughout the years? Is this something that you just did last year?
Yeah. So we started off, end of February of last year with 1 house, and we thought, you know what, maybe we'll just do like 1 property per year. And then I don't know what bug I bit in August. And I was like, you know, why wait? You know, maybe this can be a way that we can kind of accelerate our financial independence, but also build generational wealth. That's really important to my husband and I. We're first generation Canadians. You know, our families left everything they knew and loved to skateboard to be here. And so we felt like we owed it to them to start creating this legacy. And so, yeah, we started off with 1 in the beginning of the year. And then near the end of the year, in 3 months, we got 3 properties. So it's been busy.
Wow. I love that. And that's, I love that point as well, because as investors, sometimes there's no deals, or you don't find, you know, the right one. And then when it happens, I know Dave and I have experienced that over and over again, where it's a couple slow months and then boom, we find lots of deals, cash flowing properties that make sense. So kind of step us through all of that. How did you end up getting started? How did you find 3 properties? Did you use your own money? Did you leverage? Did you use partners? How did that whole process look like?
Yeah, like I think we've always been interested in investing. And I think from a young age, I've also been interested in investing. But my husband, who is my boyfriend at the time, would be like, you know, like you're in university, or I taught abroad for some time, and he'd be like, you're abroad. Like, how can we take care of these properties? And so we started off with the first investment property with our own money that we had saved for a down payment for our own primary residence. We weren't sure where we wanted to live yet. So we were like, why let this money kind of sit in the bank? Let's put it to work. And so we got our own, the first investment property. And then after that, you know, after being a part of your program and listening to all the achievements from our Action family, we thought, you know, why don't we try to look through creative financing to see how we can make this sustainable. So the last 3 properties have had a version of other people's money. So the second property was our first out of province investment property. It was a triplex. And we did that with 10% of our own money and 10% of OPM through a promissory note. So we had someone lend to us, and we're paying them back. And then the third property, that came through private lending. So we have someone who's sitting for our first mortgage with that. And then we're hoping to refinance that soon. Actually, we're just wrapping up renovations in that property.
Nice.
And the fourth one, also came through a version of other people's money. So a little bit of ours, I think like less than 5%. And then the rest of it was also through promissory note.
And that's amazing. And I'm all about, of course, I love OPM. I'm all about OPM. And I love that as well, because sometimes it doesn't have to fully be 100% OPM. If it's 90% or 95%, hey, that enables you to continue to grow so much more. So I have so many questions for you, because I know the listeners are wondering a couple of things. You're working full time, you're busy. And now how did you do, let's start off with, and I want to talk about out of province investing, because I know that's a question we often get. And I want to pick your brain about that a little bit, and how you managed it all. But I also want to talk about this whole OPM, the promissory note, how, you know, how were you able to find these lenders? How were you able to convince them to hold financing for you? Was it easier, harder than you thought?
You know what? It's been a bit harder than we thought. I think the pandemic has also brought that to our awareness. Like, we're also doing this during a time where not everyone's financially stable, and you know, everyone wants to keep cash liquid as well. And so a part of it is just sharing our journey. So for the longest time, we haven't really been doing this for a long time, but in that time, we really didn't share what we were doing. And just recently, we started sharing, like, hey, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And who we're talking to is just our friends and families right now, because we want them to benefit from this generational wealth that we're trying to build. It's for them. And so they're starting to see the benefits of that. And they trust us. I'm a math teacher by trade. So numbers is my strength. And my husband also works on the finance side. So, you know, they know where we live. They know we're not going to run away with their money, and they trust us. And they also want to be a part of, you know, this real estate investing without having to be a landlord themselves.
Right. And I love that. Why not make it a win-win? Sometimes it is with strangers or people we, other investors we may not know, but hey, if a friend or family member can see the benefits, why not do that? Now you mentioned your why. What is your why? Because I think identifying your why as an investor or as any businesswoman, it is really important to go back to that why. Because that why during the difficult times, right? When things get a little harder, it gets a little hectic for us, remembering our why is so huge. So, if you don't mind, what is your why?
Yeah, our why really started off with generational wealth. Like I said, our families, both Ginger and I, are first generation Canadian. Both of our families escaped war to find a better life within Canada. And growing up, I actually had such a bad relationship with the word debt. You know, I didn't want anything to do with it. I saw, you know, what debt did to some of our family members, and I said, you know, when I grow up, I want nothing to do with it. I'm going to live as debt-free as possible. And I would actually preach that to people. And growing up, really try to, you know, get rid of student debt right away and any consumer debt right away. But as I grew older, and really within the last year, I started to really differentiate between good debt and bad debt. And just understanding that, you know, my family may have taken on that debt for me to be where I am today. And so understanding that that's okay. And so, trying to build generational wealth through leveraging debt is, you know, a way of doing it. And so I've grown to have a healthier relationship with the word debt. And so it goes back to generational wealth. We started off saying, you know, maybe our children and their children can benefit from what we're doing today. Maybe we've kind of like, we don't have enough time to really enjoy what we're doing right now for ourselves. And speaking with someone, they really changed my mindset of, like, you know, why can't you reap the rewards of generational wealth as well? Why can't this generation enjoy it as well? And that's really changed my outlook of, you know, we can also enjoy what we're building, and hopefully others can too.
Absolutely. And that's why I love real estate so much, because it's not only can change your own, presence in your future, but that generational wealth that you continue both because you're passing on your portfolio and just your knowledge that you're acquiring as well. And I love that we talk about debt here, because that's a concept for many people. If they're brand new to our channel, they're going to say, wait a second, debt is good. Yes, and we love debt, but we love good debt, and you're bang on. How would you define the difference? So if somebody's saying, okay, wait a second, I'm not understanding this concept, how would you define good debt versus bad debt?
Yeah, it's a good thing I taught my grade eights this last week.
Oh, you did. I love
I
that.
did. Yeah, you know, it's important
Amazing.
for, you know, I never learned this, and so if it's important for me for my
I love that.
kiddos to also learn this at an early age, because just like them, they were like, "Yuck, I want nothing to do with debt." And so yeah, good debt is things that can quote unquote make you rich. So, you know, things like a house mortgage, for example, you know, and mind you, that can also become bad debt. So good debt has a possibility of becoming bad debt if it's not handled correctly. So good debt in the form of a mortgage, for example, would be something that's paying you rather than you paying it all the time. Of course, you know, when you have a primary residence, that's a different situation. But as you're accumulating more properties within your portfolio, you know, it's nice to have all, like, oh, I have like 100 doors, but it means nothing if it's not actually cash flowing and paying you back. So that's what I think good debt is.
Now I'm curious, what was the reaction of number one, the students, and number two, did you hear from any parents?
Yeah, You know what? They were kind of amazed. They were like, what do you mean? Like, I can do this through investing through stocks or investing through real estate. And I actually brought on a guest speaker as well, who's actually reached financial independence and is, you know, working as an option rather like working as a must. And so some of them actually had conversations with their parents where they maybe never would have of talking about financial independence and retiring and investing. And so the parents were actually really appreciative because they were like, you know, it's great to start having these conversations at such a young age. And this is the age where they're very impressionable, you know, at middle school. So I think the parents were appreciative of that, but they were also able to then talk about, you know, where do they sit with the word debt and where do they sit with the word financial independence. So yeah, it's started up some great conversations for sure.
That's great. That's great. I love speaking with young adults or teenagers. We have a TikTok channel. It's always Invest in Mel and Dave, and we often do some live. And so a lot of adults, of course, are still on TikTok, but quite often there are also young teenagers who are on there, 15, 18, 17, and we'll often talk about that debt. And I do love it because it is something. I love that you actually took the time to educate your students about it, because it is something that typically is not being taught in school, yet is such an important piece of the formula to success, is being able to recognize that that can be good. So kudos for you for getting outside of your comfort zone and speaking with them about it. I think that's so valuable. So that's great. I also want to talk to you about the out of province investing, because that's a big roadblock for a lot of people. They want to go outside their area, but the comfort zone. Now, I know you said you have some that are local. Is it local close by to you, and some are further, or are they all far from you?
They're all long distance, yeah.
Okay.
So
How
we
long
live in
distance?
the GTA, and so it's a little hard to find cash flowing properties within GTA. So we've actually like back in the beginning of 2020 had a list of like cities that we were interested in investing in, and whatever was within a drive's reach, kind of looked at kind of like a neighborhood search. So went with a realtor, really understood the city before we actually started investing. So we were able to do that for the Ontario markets that we're investing in. Have not been able to do that within the New Brunswick markets, of course, as well because of COVID. But yeah, I actually only really got into it because I met like-minded investors who were interested in, you know, using creative financing, but also finding properties that cash flowed. And so that was important to us as we were building financial independence, and also pivoting. I hate the word pivot right now, but, you know, pivoting our strategies because we couldn't find the right deals that matched our criteria here. So yeah, we started looking elsewhere.
Okay, and what has been probably your biggest roadblocks, or did you find it easy? And how did you build this team? I know you mentioned your network for people who are brand new, saying, okay, I'm looking to invest in different areas, but how do I do this? What's my first step? How do I go upon it?
Yeah, good question. So I think in any market, whether it's in your backyard or whether it's, you know, long distance, it is like you said, it's about building that power team. And we started with a real estate investing minded realtor. I think that's so important because they're looking for things in a different way than just any old realtor. And also they, if they're investors themselves, they may also come with a team of people that they trust and rely, whether it be contractors, whether it be handymen. So like, you know, we started working with our realtor, and then the realtor really built out our team of, you know, who's a lawyer that we can chat with, who might be an appraiser that we can chat with. And so it's really just trusting the team. You know, whether it's text message or Facebook message or emails, like the tech is so available to us to be able to build those connections without having to physically be there.
I love that. That's great. Now, did you actually physically go and look at the properties, or was
No.
everything done virtually?
Yeah, everything was done virtually. I think actually, even in our the Ontario markets, even though it's close, you know, closer than the New Brunswick ones, we actually bought them all sight unseen. We really just trust our realtors to go in and our home inspectors to really be our eyes for us. Like you said, like we have full-time jobs. I'm a teacher, so my flexibility and my schedule is very limited. So we really have to put on the trust with building a reputable team to be able to be our eyes and feet there.
Okay, awesome. That's fantastic. And I do love that. And I invest even in deals that I invest in my own city, I don't necessarily look at them. There's been some we just closed on an Aplex and I did a drive-by, but I didn't really get out of my vehicle. Like, oh, okay, that's my new building. And I didn't look at it because I trust the team, right? And at the end of the day, it's not my specialty. I'm not gonna be able to pick up on certain things that somebody who's in construction will be able to. So I love that. And I think it's important for the listeners to remember that as well, that as long as you're able to build your team and you have a strong network, your network is your net worth, of course, then it makes life so much easier.
Absolutely. And it comes with time too, right? And there are some people who we've, as we've grown, even just within the last 11 months, really, of real estate investing, that we've decided, like, you know what, this might be a better fit for us versus this person may not be. And so that we're still refining what our team looks like. And I think that's an ongoing process.
Yes, and I would agree with that. Adjusting and reviewing where you're at, what's your goals? Do they still fit? Do you need to adjust, or do you need to add, or do you need to remove? I think although investing can be somewhat passive, you still have to have your eyes on it to make sure everything's getting done properly and all that. So, what are your 2021 goals? 2021, 2022 goals? Do you have any? Have you and your husband set goals for yourselves?
So we were part of the goal setting session with the two, you and Dave and the Action Family, near the end of 2020.
Oh, good.
The first 3 months of 2021 is really just stabilizing our portfolio. Like I said, we kind of grew in a short period of time, and we're still trying to make this essentially a sustainable business rather than just being like, you know, like randomly picking things along the way. So we're using these first 3 months to really stabilize, complete some renovation jobs, get some refinances in order. And while we're doing that, you know, I'm still analyzing deals, still seeing what's out there. I think also is trying to, you know, find that balance between a little bit of fear of missing out, of FOMO, of seeing people like acquire deals still in our stabilizing period, and also understanding that, you know, maybe those deals don't fit our new criteria. So we've now built, you know, come together, Janogen and I, and come up with a set of criteria where, you know, if the deal doesn't meet these criteria, like, that's going to be an easy way of filtering out certain deals rather than being in an analysis paralysis mode. Stabilizing. We're still looking to add you know, properties to our portfolio, cash flowing properties, of course. We'd like to still build within Ontario. We're still looking for a primary residence right now, one that we can house hack. So that's something that we've added on as a element of our search. So hopefully that will come this year. And we're also still looking for a cottage. I don't know if it's going to happen this year or next year, but part of building this generational wealth is having something that our family and our friends can enjoy. And so, that's the kind of high level picture of what this year is hopefully going to look like. So, still acquiring, still analyzing, still doing daily actionable things, even if it doesn't end up with a property at the end, but still making our business sustainable.
Right, that's great. Now your cottage, are you going to be using OPM? Is that your intention to use other people's money
I
to
hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. Even with our, you know, primary residence, we're trying to see how we can apply creative financing where possible. I think that's the amazing thing about creative financing. You can get creative with it. And so, that's the goal, of course.
Yeah, and as I'm sure you know, that's how we purchased our cottage. We purchased last year was with, you know, leveraging other people's money, finding one that would be underperforming. So I have my exit strategy to pay back the lender. So absolutely can be done. Now I do want to talk a little bit about that stabilizing because that's something as investors, and I'm guilty of this absolutely. I love buying deals. It's fun closing. It's exciting being able to say, hey, look at my new building. And it's not quite as exciting to be in this stabilization phase that you're talking about, yet it is so crucial. And I just want to point that out because as investors and as business owners, it's easy to just want to be the acquisitioning part because that's fun, it's exciting, and it's growth. But the stabilization and being able to put your brakes down, it is difficult, especially when you're seeing, I mean, you're part of our Action Family Mentoring Program. You see people every single week buying properties. It's exciting. And you see, I'm like, okay, I want to continue to be one of them. But it's important. I love that you pointed this out because it's almost giving the permission for other people to realize that you do have to have
those stabilization periods where if you have, especially when you do have that quick growth, okay, well, look at everything here. What needs to stabilize? Are your systems and strategies? Do you have enough people in place? Do you need to make any changes? Or do you need to look at refinance? What's your exit strategy? And just kind of take the time to to kind of look at your portfolio again and balance everything to make sure everything's up to par. And I know as an investor, we've done that as well many, many times. We bought 12 in 12 months. And then the next year, I think we had only purchased one or two properties. So we had an extremely busy year. And then it was like, all right, now we just need to have our systems and strategies and make sure to review everything and stabilize. Now, it wasn't as exciting as buying all the properties, but it was crucial so we can get things back in center. So how are you managing that? And I'm glad you're talking about that because that is important because sometimes we just want growth, but making sure that we're growing properly is important as well.
For sure. And this is a conversation both Janoja and I had. We're in it for the long term. So we need to think about long-term goals. We need to make long-term decisions. And so, if it was a short-term thing, we can keep going and, acquiring. And at some point, we're going to be burnt out in some way. And so I think it's about finding the balance because sometimes I feel like, 2 months ago, I was like talking to this person, and I was doing things towards the acquisition part of the property. And now I'm still doing those daily actionable, steps towards our goals, but they may not be acquiring a property. It may be, watching a podcast. It might be, going through and getting tax season things ready. It might be following up with that tenant about that broken window, just things to make sure that the systems are all in place. Because like you said, we're here for the long term. We're trying to take that approach. And so taking those little breaks from maybe the acquisition part doesn't have to mean that we're just like kicking back. We're still analyzing deals. We're still practicing those skills. We're still networking. We're still attending events where possible virtually, reading books, gaining knowledge, and still taking action. But it's not in the form of putting down an offer, but perhaps it's in other ways to make sure our business is sustainable.
That's great. Well said. That's great. All right. Let's move on to the Q&A questions of action. I have three of them for you. So the first one, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Yeah, I have this answer right away. It's to not be afraid of debt. I think, finding a healthy relationship with debt is important, or just understanding that there is good debt and bad debt, and that it's not all scary, and, everything's going to work out. I'm a big believer that everything always works out at the end. And so, my relationship with debt has been evolving. So I would have probably told myself my younger self to be less afraid or less fearful of it early on.
I love that. That's great advice. Great. Second question, what's the number one tip you would give someone who wants to get started in real estate?
Yeah, start talking to different people about it. I think it's important to talk to different investors and just really learn from them. So I'm a big, I'm a teacher, I'm a lifelong learner. I love speaking to people, not only to hear about their success, but also to hear about, where would they have made mistakes so that you're cognizant of things that maybe you wouldn't have heard on a podcast or reading. Because I think it's important to gain knowledge, but it's also important to implement it. Because at one point you can learn what you want to learn, but you need to implement it. So I find a way of implementing it is to take that extra step of picking up that phone, getting on a Google Meet or whatever it is to really just network. Because as we keep saying, your network is your net worth. And so starting that early on would help.
That's fantastic. That's great. And last question, if someone wants to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so we just started our social media side of sharing our journey. So you can follow us on Instagram at investingwithjn. And we're just starting off. So we're really excited to share all of our ups and downs of our real estate investment journey. And also just, I'm an educator who's really obsessed with helping people, upgrade their financial literacy. So we're hoping to use that page for those purposes too.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much. And I'll make sure to add the description of where to contact you as well in the notes on our YouTube channel. So, well, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your journey and sharing what you're up to now and your, you know, dead, good dead and all that with us today. I love having you inside our Action Family Mentoring Program. I love the results that you've taken as the action that you've taken, the results that you've achieved as well. So congratulations on all of that.
Thanks so much, Mel.
Okay, bye for now. Noellen, thank you so much for being here today. Appreciate your time and all of your advice that you give both to your listeners and to your students as well. If you want to watch another podcast that I've done with another action taker, make sure to watch this next video. I'm Investor Mel, and I'll see you there.